Hare Krishna. So this nectar of instruction has the essential instruction. So if we consider the whole Vedas have got lot of instructions, and all this instruction, if you pick the essential ones, or if you summarize only the essential instructions, or if you actually condense the whole Vedas, then what we get? Anyone knows? If you condense the whole Vedas, only it is formed as sutras or the formulas of whole Vedas. That is presented by Srila Vyasadeva in the form of Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra. So for the whole Vedas, we can see the essential principles are given in Vedanta Sutra. In the same way, if we consider bhakti process, in the whole bhakti process, there are several instructions. There are volumes of instructions. Even Goswamis have written volumes of instructions regarding the bhakti yoga. However, if you pick the essential instruction, that is presented as nectar of instruction. Now, if we have something presented very concisely, very, very essential, very condensed way, then we have to understand we shouldn't drop even one instruction or even a one sentence, not even one word from the set of instructions, because it is so condensed, it is so precise, it is so concise. So that is the point, that is the form of nectar of instruction, because it is presented in a very, very small, very, very condensed manner. Now here, in many other books, there could be redundancy. Redundancy means repeating the same instruction one time or a few more times. However, when it comes to nectar of instruction, it is very interesting that only one instruction is being redundant. So we say there is no redundancy as such, but in fact there is one instruction stated two times. I am not going to get into that instruction now, but there is only one instruction actually repeated. So without repetition, when nectar of instruction is presented, we have to try to understand and apply as it is, and wholesomely, without missing any fine points. Now one could ask, why nectar of instruction after nectar of devotion? Is there any reason? What do you think? So we have covered nectar of devotion, and then we are coming into nectar of instruction. Any reason, actually? In one sense, nectar of devotion, it's not just the bhakti instruction, it is in detail and it is practical as well. So application is part of nectar of devotion as well, but any other reason? Association, do's and don'ts are very, very elaborately given in nectar of devotion. But nectar of instruction, we follow. There is no harm actually reading nectar of instruction before nectar of devotion. There is no harm. But at the same time, two reasons. One, nectar of instruction is very condensed. So if we have already studied the details and then we come to the condensed version, it is easy to follow, because we have already given what are do's and don'ts in devotion service. If you pick the 6th chapter of nectar devotion, it gives very elaborately what are the do's, and in the 8th chapter what are the offenses to be avoided, 64 each. So it is elaborately presenting bhakti process with do's and don'ts. Vaidhi, sadhana, daganuga, bhava, prema, etc. So it is giving in the whole ladder, right? Now, if we come to nectar of instruction, still whatever we have presented in nectar of devotion still holds, still it is presented in concise form in nectar of instruction. So that is the second reason. So the terminology what we have followed in nectar of devotion, That is, we are actually taking it and we are placing upon necro instructions. So if we have to understand the terminology correctly, then one has to go through necro devotion. That is another important reason. So one is detail, it is coming to condensed. Second, the terminology which we are followed in necro devotion, that is equally applicable in necro instruction. So especially if we have to systematically study necro instruction, then we need to know the terminologies like Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti. After that, what's the next? Raganuga, Sadhana, Bhakti. Then Bhava, Bhakti. Then Prema, Bhakti. So this sequence we should know even in necro instruction. And we have elaborately, with examples, we have studied which are these four categories of devotional service. So it is easier for us to understand in necro instruction. Now, what is the meaning of nectar of instruction? Means it is coming from the Sanskrit word Upadesha Amrita. Upadesh and Amrita, these two words are combined to form Upadesha Amrita. So that is a Sandhi rule. Sandhi, that's it. Upadesha plus Amrita, if you combine, it becomes Upadesha Amrita. There's a Dirgha. There's a, is coming. So that's how the term Upadesha Amrita is coming. Upadesha means instruction. Amrita means nectar. So that is written, it is nectar of instruction. So we had to understand the instruction given are actually nectarine. At the same time, we had to understand it is not so easy to apply this nectarine instruction. And these instructions can elevate our consciousness to very high degree, to the stage of pure devotional service. So that is the level of presentation of nectar of instruction. So it is not a very cheap book. It's a very high standard book. And there is a pastime among disciples of Srila Prabhupada. One time, while book distribution, they were avoiding distributing nectar of instruction. And Prabhupada came to know that they were distributing Bhagavad Gita, other books, but when it came to nectar of instruction, life come from life, all other books were distributed. But when it came to nectar of instruction, the devotees were reluctant in distributing that. And they said, Prabhupada, it's a bit high five book. If you pick the first verse itself, it is Vajo Vegam Manasa Krosa Vegam. So Vajo Vegam, it's first of all saying stop the urges, demands of the senses, starting from the speech. So it is heavy. So Prabhupada said, no, my old books are important to be distributed. So Prabhupada emphasized, you had to distribute nectar of instruction also. So I have seen devotees in our temple distributing nectar of instruction also. So because it is instruction, people may feel threatened when it is certain instruction. When we go for book distribution, if some yoga or something, it's easy to say it's a yoga book view. But when it comes to instruction, people can be a little shaken of instruction. Do I have to follow some instruction? So that's how it is. Now we are coming to first the preface of nectar of instruction. Today we are covering preface and mantra 1. So Srila Prabhupada writes such a wonderful preface to nectar of instruction. It's amazing how much content is present even in the preface. And it presents what is the highest stage of devotion, what is the highest subject matter in the transcendental realization. The people are, in this world, if you see, even if somebody is, first of all, there is difficulty in finding people who are interested in spiritual life. Right. And if somebody is interested in spiritual life, there is all chance that they will get misguided. And even if somebody gets into spiritual life, and even if they get some bona fide understanding about spiritual life, still come to the path of the highest understanding of spiritual life. That is very, very rare. So even one could understand to the level of knowing Krishna, that is okay, we are trying to worship Krishna. Say for instance, if we consider the great Acharyas, the time of even Madhvacharya, they used to know the worship of Krishna. Because Madhvacharya himself, there is a famous temple in near Mangalore in Udupi, right? There, who is worshipped? Krishna is worshipped. So even the worship of Krishna was present, hundreds and close to thousands years back. However, when it came to the worship of Srimati Radharani and Krishna, Radha Krishna worship, that was not there for such a long time. And here Srila Prabhupada present, that is the highest understanding of spiritual realization. That is the highest understanding, the highest mode of worship. That is worshipping Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And that is actually being presented in our parampara. That is actually presented. So if you see, in the worldwide temples, most of the temples are worshipping Srimati Radharani and Krishna, Radha Krishna worship. Here also we have Radha Vallabh. So if you go to around the globe, ISKCON's most temple, whom they worship? Radha and Krishna. If you go to Vrindavan, who is worshipped? Radha and Krishna. So that is our essence, the essential element of our parampara is worship of Radha and Krishna. And we have to understand how rare it is to come to that point, even to the understanding that this is the highest form of worship of God, along with his internal potency. Now, yeah. If you consider Vrindavan, the temples of Vrindavan, who established the temples of Vrindavan? Eh? Vrindavan was not there. Okay, in fact, okay, we will read this verse and then I will explain. So if you take the preface, Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung. So it's a beautiful song by Narottam Das Thakur. He's saying, Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hai Be Akuti Kabe Hama Bujab Se Yugala Riti. So it is mentioned, when I am eager to understand the literature given by the Goswamis, then I shall be able to understand the transcendental loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. Now, so Arjuna Sagar Prabhu asked the question, whether Radha Krishna worship existed before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We know the famous poet Jayadev, for instance. He mentioned about Radha Krishna pastimes in his song, Gita Govind, very famous. We know about Radha Krishna worship even in the pastimes of Srila Madhavendra. So there are instances where Radha Krishna worship is mentioned, and there were devotees who followed Radha Krishna worship to some degree. At the same time, the full knowledge about Radha and Krishna was revealed only by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Point number two, how many books did Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu write? Or what did he left behind when he left this world? Shikshashtakam. Only Shikshashtakam. That is comprising of only 8 verses. We have to understand, we shouldn't even undermine Shikshashtakam, because that is having information from the lower stage to the highest stage. So we had to understand, in 8 verses Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting our philosophy from the lower stage to the highest stage. But he didn't left behind any book. So who wrote all the books? Everything was written by Goswami. That's the reason, without understanding the mode of Goswami through their literature, it is not possible to understand Radha and Krishna. And that's the reason, if you see, this book is written by Srila Rupa Goswami. So how significant it is. And we discussed about Rupa Goswami in the beginning of Nectar of Devotion. I hope everyone remembers. He is the leader of all the Goswamis. Of the 6 Goswamis, the most prominent one is Srila Rupa Goswami. Even though Sanatan Goswami was his elder brother, still, in terms of Siddhanta, Rupa Goswami is the leading. So we are known as Rupanuga. So that is straightforward. Anuga means one who follows. So we are following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. So I am not actually getting into the pastimes of Rupa Goswami, but in brief, in Jagannath Puri, when Rupa Goswami, there were few occasions where Srila Rupa Goswami met with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Allahabad, we know, in the Dashashvamedha cut, we read how Mahaprabhu imparted instructions to Srila Rupa Goswami. It was given in the preface of Nectar of Devotion. So after that, we discussed how Rupa Goswami went to Jagannath Puri, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced Rupa Goswami to all the great Vaishnavas, all the great associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Haridas Thakur, Ramananda Roy, Vakreshwar Pandit, all the his servant was there, Govinda, Sarupdamadar Goswami, his personal secretary. So all the great Vaishnavas were there, and Mahaprabhu glorified Rupa Goswami, and then finally he instructed Rupa Goswami, you go to Vrindavan and now you can reveal all our transcendental truths on the basis of scriptures to the whole world. So two instructions, one to reveal the scriptures, second establish temples in Vrindavan so that Vrindavan becomes a place of worship, it becomes a place of pilgrimage. So this is, see the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the Supreme Lord. So he has given everything. Say the Goswamis, they have given everything. When Srila Prabhupada, he translated and he wrote purport to the work of Upadeshamrita, similarly other books. And when Prabhupada writes commentary on Bhagavatam or anything, he had the commentaries of different Goswamis and Acharya's books in front of him. So he had the Sanskrit books in front of him, and he was referring and he was writing in such a way that we could understand. So it is that reason, it's not just a translation, there's a purport, because we can understand practically how to apply these principles in our day-to-day life. So that is the initial part of the preface, that is Narottam Das Thakur is actually paying obeisances to Goswamis, because only by their mercy we can understand about Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Now what is the purpose of writing Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction? Can anyone say? What is the purpose? To bring us to the level of Goswamis. It's a very good point. To bring us to the level of Goswamis. So what's the meaning of Goswami? It's a title, we know it's a title. Okay, go means the senses. Go has how many meanings? At least two meanings, we know. The senses as well as the cow. So here it is meaning, Goswami means one who has control over the senses. Now, there is a very important statement. What is the connection between Goswami and a pure devotee? What is the connection between Goswami and a pure devotee? Only a Goswami can be a pure devotee. Why? Yeah. Okay, what is the difference between a pure devotee and a Goswami? In a strictly in terms of terminology. Goswami you understood, we discussed. A pure devotee, what's the difference? Goswami means one who can control the senses to the fullest. Full control of the senses and mind. And a pure devotee means? Okay, engages the senses in Krishna's service. Says our Guru, take some water or go. So, a pure devotee is a fully, he is a servant of Krishna. So, now my question is, if we are not a Goswami, then who are we?
Godas.
So on one side we have Godas, and on the other side we have pure devotee, means who's Das? Krishna Das. So can one be both Godas and Krishna Das simultaneously? No. It's even a biblical statement. No one can serve two masters. Right? So one can either serve the senses or one could serve the Bhakti Sar Prabhu or Nandavati. Yes. You can call over the phone. Maybe if they are not there in the temple, then you can call over the face. So that's the reason it is mentioned one has to be a Goswami before becoming a pure devotee. So becoming Goswami is the first step, and then a pure devotee. And here it is mentioned initially one will be affected by the mode of passion and ignorance. So by following this process, the instructions given in nectar of instruction, one can come to the mode of goodness. So just the primary sense control exists in which mode? In the mode of goodness. In passion, it is what happened? Yeah, it's not just utilization. It's mostly exploitation of the senses. It's not just utilization. It is eating means unlimited. And in ignorance means sleeping means unlimited. You know, it's like people who can't control. You know, some people are addicted to sleeping. That is one of their main recreational activities. 12 hours is a norm. 12 hours of sleeping is a norm. So that is a recreational activity. So that is, we shouldn't do that. So that is, so we have to come to the mode of goodness. So that's the reason these instructions are given. Now, what is the overview? If you see the overview, we understood the purpose. Now, if you see, just briefly go through the overview of nectar of instruction, it is very, very interesting, because in just 11 verses, how many verses? Just 11 verses, Srila Rupa Goswami actually lifts us from the bottommost level to the suprememost level in devotion. Can you see, you know, how powerful it is? Because the verse number 1 in Nectar of Instruction, it is talking about sense control, which is the beginning of bhakti. Because to properly be engaged in the process of devotional service, one has to control the senses, and that is the beginning. And in the verse 11, Rupa Goswami is glorifying Radhakund and saying Radhakund is no different from Srimati Radharani. And by serving Radhakund, how can one get to the service of Srimati Radharani? By the assistance of her eternal gopi servants. So ultimately becoming a servant of Srimati Radharani, assistant of gopis, by serving Radhakund. How can come to that platform? And how can one eternally serve Vrindavan? To that level, the nectar of instruction is taking us. How powerful it is. Think about it. How it is possible for any ordinary being to write even such a thing. Because it is very interesting. Say, it's a very important and a very interesting statement from Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is, eloquence is truth spoken concisely. That is known as eloquence. This is the words of Sri Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Because one can blather so many things. You know, if you want to write an essay, one can just, you know, keep going, and there is no limit. You know, page after page after page, people could write. But if one has to present all the truth very concisely, one should know exactly what is the truth, right? Otherwise one cannot write. So when it comes to nectar of instruction, Srila Rupa Goswami exactly knows what is the beginning of devotional service and what is the highest stage of devotional service. So since he knows the whole thing, the whole process, he knows. He has realized the whole process, and he himself is an assistant of gopis, because he himself is Rupa Manjari. So in that position, he can actually summarize the whole instructions as 11 verses. And these verses, many of them are not even two big verses, 4-line verses. So that is the potency of nectar of instruction. And we have actually obtained such a wonderful opportunity to go through it. So we should go through everything, even purport everything, one should actually learn and meditate. Understand, so much nectar in this. So much of important instructions are presented in this. So if you read the purport, you are supposed to read the purport before coming, so that you can actually grasp it. And when writing essay, one can actually get into it. One can remember. So that is so much important. As far as there are instructions, and if you don't apply the instruction, it's not of much value. Prabhu says the armchair philosophers. Even if you don't apply any principle, still one can talk about the principles very nicely. That is known as armchair philosophy. One can speak very nicely. But there is no application. There is no application means there is no change in consciousness. Means still one is suffering. What's the difference between a devotee, a primary difference between a devotee and a non-devotee? A non-devotee is suffering. And a devotee, if you are a so-called devotee, then we are also suffering. In the guise of a devotee. But when you actually apply this principle, then there will be transformation of the heart, and then we start relishing. So So that is actually susukham kartum avyam. We will learn the next unit in the ninth chapter. Susukham kartum avyam. Otherwise, again, it becomes dushkaram. It won't become susukham, dushkaram. Dushkaram means very difficult. Do, you know, many things to do is not very good. It's like the how many sons? 101, right? Altogether. 100 sons and 1 daughter. So 101 is dushala is the last one. So do. Do means not very auspicious, very difficult. So even our devotional life becomes dushkaram instead of sukaram or susukham. So in Chaitanya Charitamrita they say, you know, even the dushkaram can become sukaram by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if you think about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If not, even the sukaram becomes dushkaram. So that is the difference. Now, if we classify the whole nectar of instruction, there are 11 verses. First 7 verses are talking about Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti. It's also presented in your handbook. First 7 verses are about Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti. Can anyone very clearly explain to me what is Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti? What are the 11? You don't have to verbatim tell the definition, but what are the main ingredients of Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti from a definition point of view? It is devotional service in practice, not enough. Okay, in practice, according to rules and regulations, that's fine, but that's not complete. What is the important element of sadhana? Eh? Yeah, that is when we come to the definition of pure devotional service. Exactly, engaging the senses and mind in service of Krishna. So that is actually the principle of Vaidhi element. Sorry, the sadhana element. Vaidhi means, what is Vaidhi? Means vidhi. It is coming from the word vidhi. Vidhi means rules and regulations. And when it comes to sadhana, sadhana means we are applying our senses in service of Krishna as well as the mind. Because in bhava and prema, it is working on a different platform altogether. So to distinguish, it is very clearly mentioned, it is the application of the mind and senses in service of Krishna. So one has to be very clear about this, that applying the mind and service in service of Krishna. Then, verse 8, in one verse, after Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti, what is the next level? Raganuga, Sadhana, Bhakti. So somebody can tell what is Raganuga, Sadhana, Bhakti? 7, just A, the verse 8. 1 to 7 is Vaidhi, Sadhana, Bhakti. Verse 8 is Raganuga, Sadhana, Bhakti. So what is Raganuga, Sadhana, Bhakti? It is spontaneous, but we have to be more precise after learning nectar devotion. Exactly, following the performing devotional service in the footsteps, following in the footsteps of Ragasmika devotee. So who is Ragasmika devotee? You know who is Ragasmika devotee? Yeah, devotees in Vrindavan, that is Ragasmika devotee. So that is Raganuga Bhakti. So that is the Anuga is coming, the term. Be careful about the deck. Rupa Anuga, Raga Anuga. See? Anuga Anuga means to follow. So we are following someone. Rupa Anuga means we are following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. Raga Anuga means we are actually following in the footsteps of Raga Atmika Bhakta. That is Anuga is coming. Actually, Anuga is again actually two words. Anu means actually to follow. Ga is coming from Gachadi, going. So that's how this Anuga is coming. Now, after that, verses from 9 to 11, means 9, 10 and 11 are speaking about bhava and prema. So, can we see how the nectar of instruction is progressing in terms of this content? Starting from Vaidhi to Raganuga to bhava to prema. So, now we can really understand why we did study nectar of devotion before nectar of instruction. Can you see the difference? Because if you don't understand what are these different types of devotion, then it is difficult to appreciate nectar of instruction. Because if you want to appreciate something which is very concise, then we need quite a bit of knowledge so that we can actually extract the meaning out of each concise verses. Even each concise word, what more word, still it has so much of meaning. Now, it's also very important to know that Rupa Goswami has written many books. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that was our previous matter of subject matter for study. Then Vidaktha Madhava, Lalita Madhava, etc. and Upadeshamrita, etc. But Upadeshamrita is specifically meant for whom? Neophyte devotees like us. So it is Prabhupada mentioned in the preface. One should actually study this first. And at the end of the preface, Prabhupada says, one should follow these instructions very strictly. So this is not just to understand, but to follow very strictly. So that is very significant. Then it will be easier to make one's life successful, Hare Krishna. Okay. If you don't strictly follow, then it is very difficult to make our life successful. So important. Now we are actually getting into the section, the mantra one, the verse one. Ready, everyone has a book. Shall we read the text? This verse, is it for memorizing? First verse, so beautiful verses. So I'll read the first pada, then you can repeat that like this.
Vacho vegam manasah krodha vegam.
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 Jihva vegam udaropastha vegam.
Jihva vegam udaropastha vegam.
Jihva vegam udaropastha vegam.
Jihva vegam udaropastha vegam.
Etan veganyo vishaheda dhiraha.
Etan veganyo vishaheda dhiraha.
Etan veganyo vishaheda dhiraha.
Etan veganyo vishaheda dhiraha.
Sarvam abhimam prithivim sashishyat.
Sarvam abhimam prithivim sashishyat.
Sarvan sarvam abhimam prithivim sashishyat.
Sarvam abhimam prithivim sashishyat.
Vachaha,
vachaha,
of speech,
of speech.
Vegam,
vegam,
earth.
Earth.
So how many times in this verse the word vegam is used?
Five times.
So it is, the whole verse has a strong implication about vegam. Vegam means urge. Vegam can mean also demand. Okay. Urge or demand. So now, manasaha, of the mind, krodha, of anger, vegam, urge, jihva, of the tongue, vegam, urge, utara upastha, of the belly and genitals, vegam, urge, etan, these. Vegan, urges,
yaha,
whoever,
visheta,
can tolerate,
viraha, sober, sarvam,
all,
api,
certainly,
imam,
this, prithivim, world, saha.
So,
that personality.
Shishyat
can make disciples. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger and the urge of the tongue, belly and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Now we can read it responsibly. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak,
the
mind's demands,
the mind's demands,
the actions of anger,
the actions of anger,
and urges of the tongue,
and the urges of the tongue,
belly and genitals,
belly and genitals,
is qualified to make disciples,
is qualified to make disciples,
all over the world,
all over the world.
So it is talking about the urges and its control and it, what it can give, sort of, that's in nutshell. Now here, before actually getting into the verse, before getting into the sense control, very beautiful discussion is given about atonement or prayaschitta. And that is given, discussion is, there is a very nice question, if you see the purport in the second page, why do people undergo atonement if they cannot control their senses? If one cannot control the sense, then what is the point of atonement? Now, the principle here given is, it shows the deficiency of atonement, the deficiency of prayaschitta, and it also shows atonement cannot replace the need of sense control, the necessity of sense control. So what it is, if you try to see, there is a beautiful description given about an analogy of a thief. A thief can see other thieves are being caught and they are getting punished. They can hear from Shastra or from learned people that one shouldn't steal. But even after seeing and hearing that he shouldn't do that, still he goes and steals. And after that, he may get caught. So he is not actually learning from seeing, not from hearing. So from this it shows, okay, first mode of learning, the primitive way of learning is actually seeing and even experiencing. The worst kind of learning, people say experience is the biggest teacher. Have you heard this? Experience is the biggest teacher. But according to Veda, experience is not the biggest teacher. Experience is the lowest way of learning things. You don't have to experience to learn something. And even before experiencing, one can see. If somebody is suffering, one can see. He is being actually did this nonsense. He got caught and he is getting punished. He can see. So that is a level above in terms of understanding. A level above the intelligence of experiencing and learning. One level above is, okay, you can see and learn. And it is mentioned, even one doesn't have to see, nor one doesn't have to experience, but just hear. That is the whole point of Shruti. You see, even Vedas are known as Shruti. Shabda, it's called Shabda. Knowledge is present as Shabda. Because just by hearing we can understand everything. We don't have to actually go through the seeing or experiencing. With hearing itself can give the realization. This is the interesting point. So it is mentioned, very, very nice phrase I will mention regarding hearing. It is from the, just a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto. Lord Brahma, who is the creator, secondary creator of the universe, regarding the prayer to the creative energy, Lord Brahma says a very interesting verse, and in that there is one nice phrase. He says, Shruteekshana Patha. Shruteekshana Patha. Three words in this phrase are there. Shruti, Ikshana, and Patha. Patha means path. Shruti means hearing. Ikshana means seeing. So our process is seeing through hearing. In other words, we can see and you can get experience just by hearing. So this is Prabhupada says that is the most intelligent way of learning, by hearing. So hearing is the highest way. Next is seeing. Third is experiencing. And what is the fourth? Even after experiencing and experiencing and experiencing and experiencing, one is not learning. So a thief is stealing, he is getting punished. When he gets out, he again indulges in the same activity, he again gets caught, again and again and again. In this world we can see many people who have made their home jail. Their home is jail. Because that is the, you know, the natural place to be. Outside world is that field of activity. It's like going to work. We go to work and, you know, come back to home. In the same way, jail is their home, they go for their activity and they come back. And in many cases, they bribe the people so that they have a comfortable living in the jail, or so they really make it home. So this is the lowest class of intelligence. So Maharaj Parikshit is asking, what is the use of this kind of atonement? Okay, in case of jail, what is the atonement or what is the prayaschitta? Say, if we consider that we have the law book and somebody is acting against the law book and he is getting caught and he is being punished. So where is the atonement in the system? What is the atonement? If somebody is stealing and he is getting caught and is put in jail, which is the atonement section? Or what is the prayaschitta here? Being in the jail. Jail is the atonement. But the problem is, Shubhagadeva Goswami is asking, but there is no real atonement, there is no transformation. If spending some time, it is good for the society. Why? Because at least that time, they will not create trouble. So we cannot deny the whole thing. Okay, there is some purpose. But in terms of that personality, the atonement is not creating any transformation with it.
So is it that they will try to transform the person by making him, like giving him the fear that, like people don't want to go to jail, they are fearful of going to jail.
Yeah.
So fear, will that not come under at all? Scared of going to prohibit himself or do it again?
No, that fear is not atonement, that is a healthy fear, understanding the principles. So even devotees, we also have fear element, right? Beginning stage at least. It is good to be fear of Maya. It is good to be fearful. If I violate the regulative principles, what would happen? That fear is good to some degree. That is healthy fear. So that is actually helping one not to commit activity. That is not atonement. Atonement means prayaschitta. Do you know the term prayaschitta? Prayaschitta or atonement is what you are doing after committing a sinful activity. How are you going to counteract or how are you going to repent after committing a sinful activity? So that is atonement. See, so that is not exactly, there is difference. Atonement or prayaschitta is after committing something. So Prabhupada gives the example, say elephant bait. This is actually from, okay, the context I will explain why this text is coming. It's interesting, no? Because in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end, the whole sinful punishments are given in the hell, many verses. And after hearing this from Sri Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit asked, he is a great Vaishnava, and he started thinking, these people are suffering like anything. So they are committing sinful activities, and for that sinful activities, they are punished in the hellish planets because of the severity of the sinful reaction. Now, Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit asked, if they are getting such a torture, the treatment which is so torturous, then is there any escape from such a hellish condition? Is there any real atonement? And he says, what is the real atonement? So what is not the real atonement? That is given in this verse, that is Kunjara Shauchavat. Kunjara means elephant. Shauchavat means just like an elephant taking bath. Have you ever seen elephant taking bath in your experience? Have you seen? Have you anyone seen?
Discovery
Channel. Discovery Channel, you have seen. I have also seen lives. I have seen many times. Many times. Maybe the elephant experience and my own experience, you know, throwing mud after the bath. So everyone have their own experience. Maybe you don't have, but generally people have their own experience of throwing the mud after taking bath. And also one can see elephant bathing means, you have to understand, a lot of water is being used. If they are not going to a river or something, a lot of other, if there is a tank, they use a lot of water, from their, what do you call, the trunk, they actually suck the whole lot of water like a pump, you know, it's like a shh. And after that they, you know, bathe themselves like a shower, you know, a lot of water is being consumed. After everything, just walks and picks a lot of mud, and sometimes lie down and, you know, like this, do all these kind of things, and then again completely dirty. So Maharaj Parikshit is saying, people are committing sinful activities and after that they are going through atonement. For instance, people are stealing and then put in the jail as atonement. But after the whole atonement, there is no transformation within, so that they are inclined further to do sinful activities. So what is the whole point of atonement? So he is bringing the point, the deficiency of atonement. You understand? The deficiency, the process itself is deficient. It doesn't have the ability to purify one person's heart. So this is the point that is being made. Then Prabhupada actually gives the application to devotees, to us. Okay? Prabhupada is actually bringing the whole thing to us. Prabhupada says, we also chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra and we also do what? We can do what activity? Sinful activity. So we might do, apparently we do chanting of Hare Krishna and after that we may do some, commit some sinful activity. So it is like Prabhupada used the term, one of the offenses against the holy name. Namna balad yasya papa buddhi. That is, with the strength of the holy name one is committing sinful activity. So such kind of chanting is offensive and the effect, the purificatory process is chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and at the same time since we are performing the offense by committing sinful activities, the potency of holy name is not manifested. It is like lighting fire and then throwing one bucket of water. How is it? How effective the technique is? Very hardship, the wind is blowing, the Kali Yuga wind is blowing in all different directions. And with hardship we are chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra with mind all over, that is one thing. And apart from that, if we commit some sinful activities also, that sinful activities we'll see what it is. Even if we commit some sinful activities, then it is just few buckets of water. First of all, it's very difficult to light and then few buckets of water. So it becomes very inefficient, very ineffective. Now this is one example for us devotees. Then Prabhupada gives the same equivalent for Christians. What Prabhupada says? Again. So think about the poor priest who has listened all these different kind of things. And people say different, very nasty things in their life. And I know I have some Christian friends because I am in a place where there are a lot of Christians. And they say they do a lot of nonsense. You know, it is actually, as a devotee, if you hear, it is very agitating for the mind. And they go to the priest and they tell these things every week. And he's telling every week they confess. The whole week is a time for sinful enjoyment. And the weekend, half an hour or 15 minutes, the package is given. And crux is the whole thing is given and a poor fellow has to listen. Think of their job, you know. And if they keep committing these sinful activities, think about the plight of, and an unfortunate plight of that priest who has listened all these things. And with this process, there is no improvement of consciousness. No. So this is again an atonement which is useless. Now I am going to ask one statement. A sinful activity, if you take page number 3, a sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. So what do you understand from this? And my question is, if we accept this point, if we consider there is no effect of atonement, if we consider that a sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity, what does that mean? Does it mean if you do something and the atonement doesn't have any effect, or what does this mean? How can we understand this statement? A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. Okay. That's a good point. We cannot, randomly, I cannot beat one and another person I am giving nice massage. So both are counteracted. Okay, so that is a good example. But in terms of atonement, how can we understand this? Is there anything really like atonement, first of all? Okay, so what is that? I am not talking about the real atonement, but what we discussed as atonement. Removing the inclination altogether, that is the real atonement. That will come in a few minutes. But before that, the usual kind of atonement. Punishment, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, punishment. So, that, does it have any effect or not?
A little bit.
Means, can you be more clear?
You can counter the reactions of the sin you did.
Okay, that's a very nice point. And I also want to add one more point to that. That is, these atonements are given in some shastra. It's not whimsical. It's not, we cannot manufacture atonement. Then it becomes a concocted system of atonement. So Prabhupada gives a very nice example of from Manu Samhita. Prabhupada says the religious code book, the primary one is Dharma Shastra, the primary one is Manu Samhita. Manu Samhita deals with these kind of things. So it is mentioned, if somebody kills someone, murder, what is the atonement? Yeah, he is given capital punishment by the state. So this is the kind of atonement. So atonement is not an easy go. It is quite severe. That is, one person kills somebody, then as a punishment the state can give the capital punishment, can kill him. So this is the atonement. But that can actually avoid the sinful reaction, because anyway he is meant to be killed. You see? So instead of punishing severely, at least the state is giving that punishment so that he doesn't have to suffer further. So that is the kind of atonement. But as you pointed out, it cannot remove the inclination, proclivity to perform the same thing flagrantly. Why? Why? Why atonement cannot remove the inclination to perform sinful activity?
There is no chance for you to do that. Emotion is that it forms the leader and it grows and it goes to the status.
Okay. Now, to understand that, again I will read this sentence once again and you think about it. A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. True or right? So, you think in this direction. Why can't we remove the inclination to perform sin by an atonement or a pious activity?
But atonement is not a reason.
Yes, it is. It's not the real, why it's not the real atonement? Yeah, it can be forceful, but why it's not the real atonement? Okay, the force and voluntary is different thing. Yeah, but why?
It does not make any change.
The consciousness is the same or the desires.
Yes, that these points are all right. Material, yeah. So, can you coin a better word? A sinful activity cannot be counteracted by a pious activity. So, both are falling on which platform? Exactly. Both are falling on material platform, right? And both are fruitive activities. So, the point is, one full fruitive activity, and if you pick two fruitive activities to counteract, it will not counteract. It will produce some fruitive result. So I will read a very beautiful verse from 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Sukadeva Goswami is saying, exactly this context, he is saying, Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, answered, "My dear king, since acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive." Understood? The acts meant to neutralize impious actions are also fruitive. They will not release one from the tendency to act fruitive. Because this is pious activity is also fruitive activity. Now, persons who subject themselves to the rules and regulations of atonement are not at all intelligent. Indeed, they are in the mode of darkness. Unless one is freed from the mode of ignorance, trying to counteract one action through another is useless, because this will not uproot one's desire. Same point, it will not uproot one's desire. Thus, even though one may superficially seem pious, he will undoubtedly be prone to act impiously. Therefore, Okay, it is coming to the real atonement. So, what is the real atonement? Yeah, what does Prabhu say? Prabhu actually says two things regarding real atonement. There are two atonements prescribed. One is gradual and one is straight. Which is a gradual process? Tell me from the book. What is written? There is a gradual process, following the yogic process, tapasya, austerities, celibacy, giving in charity, and like that, developing one's consciousness. Or the easy way is following what? Four regulatory principles and chanting, engaging in devotional service. Four regulatory principle is negative, it is giving up something. And positive activity is engaging in the devotional service of Radha and Krishna. So that is a process. So which is easier? What is easier? Devotional service is the easier. That is a real atonement because it is directly changing the consciousness. So there is no difficulty in avoiding sinful activities, avoiding controlling the senses. Any questions? Okay, if not, we are going to the next important session, and which is the actual today's essay session is the same thing. That is about, what is this verse talking about? Controlling the mind. Yeah. We can see how by controlling senses, even our attitude, how can we develop in Krishna consciousness. Now, what I will do is, even though it is given sequentially, like this, I am going to jump a little bit to page 7. So we have done till mid of page 4, right? Why I am jumping is just to give you an idea. It is we are talking about conditioned souls. We are all conditioned souls. Condition means condition supply. There is a fine print. Condition supply for us. So we are spirit soul engrossed by matter in both subtle and gross form. And as far as we are conditioned by external energy of the Lord, we are victimized by the external energy of the Lord. Victimized. What is the meaning of victimized? We are being victims. Victims. What is victims?
Prey.
Victims. So we are actually being victimized. Can you understand that term? Victimized. We are victims of the modes of material nature. We are being constantly attacked. We are actually, and here it's a, if you see the three things, it's being actually Bhaktisiddhanta says Thakur, if we classify into three. So we are victimized by one, the urge to speak, the demand to push to speak. There is one kind of push for us. There is one kind of victimization. Second kind of victimization is demands of the mind. See where the desires are coming from? Mind has a lot of repository of so many desires. So it is pushing us. A person may be happily sitting there. Suddenly some desires come. Then he has to jump out. And he has to earn a lot of money. And he may have one house with one bedroom and his budget will be sufficient to pay the rent and to move smoothly. But suddenly the mind demands. Look at your neighbor. He has four bedrooms and two beautiful cars, one BMW and one Merc. So now you start working hard. So you, at least they work hard. They, it may come or it may not come because karma dictates over the results. So we can't say. But see, one person was peacefully sitting, but the mind, his own mind is victimizing him. Can you see? He's utilizing him, he's crushing him, and he has to do something. This is demands of the mind. And we'll go further into it. And finally, the demands of the body. So these are the primary classification. Even in the mind, also the anger will also come. And in the and the demand of the body, demand of, what is this? Demand of tongue, demand of belly, and demand of genitals. These are demanding. So you see, we are separate from the body, we are separate from the mind, we are spirit soul, but in this conditioned state, in Prabhupada often writes, disadvantageous position. We are, you know, disadvantageous position. We are of disadvantage. In this position, these people are actually attacking us. Another example is like, for an elephant, even Gajendra Moksha Kriti, an elephant being in the water, the elephant is in, even though the strength of Gajendra is a very powerful elephant, he is in a very disadvantageous position because that is not his natural position. Similarly, for spirits or for us, Melbourne is not the natural position. Melbourne is not our natural world. So, when the whole material energy attacks, that too, external energy is there outside, but here, in the form of our bodily demands, or the demand of the mind, and the demand of our tongue, it is attacking us. So, these are the vegam. So, we can see, we can appreciate the word vegam, the urges, the demand, the pushing. This is actually attacking us. And saying, give me this, give me that, all the time. Will any of our senses say, look, you have fed me such a long time, every day, three times, at least four times. But now, today, and I'll give you a break. You don't have to work so hard today, just today. No. Not even one time. Even to fast, even for doing a fasting, we had to actually philosophize, we had to sankalpa, determination, everything is given just to give up one meal, we think few times, right? So that's how the senses are, this is called victimization. So we are already in a victimized position. We are already being controlled. We are not controlling anything, we are being controlled. So now we are actually coming to Krishna consciousness and we are trying to see which are those pushes. The first one is Vacho Vegam. Vacho Vegam, that is us to speak. Now, so what I have done is, the way I am presenting is, say, now first I almost went to the middle of the 7th page so that we know the classification. Three levels. One is the speech, the demand of the speech, then demands of the mind, which includes the mind itself as well as anger, because it is a transformation of the mind. Then third, demands of the body, which includes tongue, belly, and genitals. So this was the three levels. First I went there to get this classification and understand we are being victimized by this material energy in this form. Second, now we are going step by step. One is, so in this purport, the interesting way of Prabhupada is presented, initially Prabhupada presents which are the real urges of different senses. Okay, the sixth one presents, along with how to control it. Then Prabhupada gives a detailed, bit more details on the same thing. So what I have done is, when I am presenting, I am combining these two. When it comes to controlling of speech, I am giving this from both sides, merging it together and presenting, so that in one discussion we can get an overview of everything. And what is important for you, you have to understand the principles, and there is an essay that we have to write, and that essay is, I'll read it out, you might have read it. Describe how you can personally control the urges of the senses with appropriate reference to Sanskrit words and analogies from Sri Upadeshamrita text 1. So it's a practical application question. So we have this demand, the urges, so how can we control that in a Krishna conscious way as given in this text? So we are coming to the first one, that is the urge to speak. Speech. So in the page 7, last paragraph gives what is actually useless speech, nonsense speaking. What is meant by nonsense speaking? So the useless speech is not just rubbish that we speak. We call it a nice term, prajalpa. That we are not actually, useless speech is not restricted just by prajalpa, but all the literature which is not talking about Krishna or devotional service, that is also prajalpa, that is also useless speech. If you see so many newspapers, the rubbish, so many articles, so many novels, so many this and that, internet, these things are all a collection of useless speech. Because they want to speak, and that instead of in terms of voice, it is coming in terms of writing or typing. So these are all considered useless speech. One doesn't talk about? It is not about the Shambhala Dasam. Who is talking about the subject matters of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, here Bhagavatam itself gives a beautiful verse. Very nice, from the 5th chapter. Now here is the page number 8 to give, explaining what is useless speech. Nayat vachis chitrapadam harer yasho jagat pavitram pragrinita kahiche tad vayasam tirtham ushanti manasa nayatra hamsa niramanti shikshayaha. So it's a beautiful verse because it's talking about vayasam. Vayasam means cross. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for cross. Since the all perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. Now, what is Vayasam Tirtham? Vayasam Tirtham means, Vayasam means cross, Tirtham means the place of pilgrimage. So, what is the place of pilgrimage of cross? Garbage. So it is a very poetically, Bhavadam is very interesting because even it has to say a very very negative comment and a very very bad statement, but very poetically it is making the statement. It is saying tad vayasam tirtham ushanti manasa, and it is considered as a garbage by ushanti manasa. Manasa means who are actually, it is also mentioned, manasa is actually the hamsa, paramahamsa. They are interested, the hamsa are found in manasa sarovar. You know, in the same way, the great devotees who are paramahamsas, who are not interested in this rubbish, but they are actually interested in the abode of the Lord, they are not at all interested for this rubbish things, this rubbish literature. So this, whatever rubbish literature we find in the market or in our house, okay, or in the internet or computer, wherever, these are all vayasam tirtham. And we shouldn't be after vayasam tirtham. We should look for something else. And that next verse, I think, exactly, Bhagavatam is very nice because 10 and 11, the 5th chapter of Bhagavatam, next verse actually gives what is actually real stuff. And in that verse, another interesting statement is actually, Nayat vachis chitrapadam. Chitrapadam means actually, chitrapadam means beautiful decorative language. Novels, maybe Shakespeare, or in a very beautiful decorative language. It is ornating the whole subject matter by beautiful presentation. Still it is vayasam tirtham. Because why? Because not Harer Esho. Harer Esho means the glorification of Hari. And that, what is the qualification of that? That is Jagat Pavitram. Jagat Pavitram, that can sanctify the whole world. Jagat Pavitram, it can sanctify the whole world. So that is the glory of Hari, the Harer Esha, the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari. And if it is not there, then it is destroyed. So we have to reject. So we should understand what is right and what is wrong. Now, exactly the opposite side of the coin, next verse, Bhagavatam says what is really to be glorified. And what is the effect of that? That is Tadvak Visarga. This verse is very important, interesting, because why? Any kind of Srimad Bhagavatam you pick, in the introduction this verse is presented. Tadvag visargo janathaga viplavo yasmin pradishlogam avasya vatyavi namani anantasya yashongitani yat shrunanti gayanti grananti sadhavaha. So it is exactly mentioned everywhere. And here the contrary statement is, even if there is some mistakes, that is the point. Abadhya vatyavi. Abadha means mistakes. Even though in the statements which are actually glorifying the Supreme Lord, even though it is imperfectly compiled, still it is purificatory. And it is being accepted, it is being chanted, and it is being glorified by devotees who are thoroughly honest. That is the beauty of glorification of the Supreme Lord. And it is potent to create a revolution in the impious lives of people, the masses of this world who are impious. It can create a revolution. That is the difference between Bhagavatam and nonsense literature. Bhagavatam can create a revolution in the consciousness of our impious life. We can see that ourselves. We could stop all the sinful activities, at least grossly. How? By the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is the effect of Bhagavatam. So this is the difference between Vaisantirtham, the garbage, and what is real stuff, which can actually purify us. So now we understood what is useless speech. So what are useless speech? Through coming through the mouth or whatever we are reading. And another inappropriate things are okay, now it's very interesting. When we come to the beginning part, it's mentioned, how can we actually avoid this, how can we stop this urge to speak nonsense? Two methods are given. One is inappropriate method and one is appropriate method. In other words, one is non-Krishna conscious method and one is Krishna conscious method. So what is the non-Krishna conscious method for stopping our tongue from speaking all nonsense? Mavini, correct. That is don't speak anything. Now onward. Or Buddhist, yeah. Or take a Prabhu says even silence of Mayavadis is written. Example, silence of Mayavadis. That's inappropriate way. Take a towel, kerchief, Mauni Baba. So that is one approach. And even sometimes, it is very interesting, even in the devotional community also, this time things can happen. One time we were going to Ekachakragra, Nityananda Prabhu. So we were chanting, a group of devotees were there, around 100. We were going chanting. Immediately authority said, here you cannot make such kind of noise. Silence. It's a very holy place. It's Lord Nityananda's appearance. So silence. So this is misunderstanding of the whole point. That's not silence. Then even another example interesting is, even before appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip, Brahmanas used to say, to chant the names like Hari, Govinda, one has to look for auspicious moment. One has to take a bath in Ganges, and you cannot just, you cannot just shout the names of Hari and Govinda. So these are the rules. So actually, Mahaprabhu actually broke all these rules and regulations, which were not correct. And another statement we can say, even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, again, when Vallabha Bhatta approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, great Acharya Vallabha Bhatta, he mentioned to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how could you chant the name of one's husband loudly? So according to Vedic culture, one is not allowed to utter the name of one's husband. Wife cannot call husband by name. In the same way, in the ultimate sense, the Lord is the husband, he is the Swami, and we are like his wives, or we are in an inferior position. So we shouldn't actually utter this name. So this statement was made by Vallabha Bhatta. Mahaprabhu said, we have actually misunderstood the whole concept. Because here, the husband, the Lord himself is asking everyone to chant his holy names all the time. And now if you don't chant, then it doesn't make any sense. So these are the misconceptions that were present before. And it can even come to our heart. So these are inappropriate ways of controlling the urge of speech. And but it's very simple, what is the real way of controlling the speech? By Krishna Gatha, 12-hour kirtan. One can chant, one can describe the name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Everything is Krishna Gatha. Chanting is Krishna Gatha, giving a lecture is Krishna Gatha, distributing is all Krishna Gatha. So in that way one can actually control the tongue. Yeah.
So this was to the second verse. Mm-hmm. It said that the name, even in spite of, sorry, even it is not completely or fully narrated.
Yeah.
The past tense of process haven't changed.
Yeah.
But this morning too we heard in the lecture that Mara said that, I mean, we have seen the titles of Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
So they are also known.
Yes.
So at least their approach should change the heart of someone, though they are not very
The reason is, Prabhupada, I can give you the example. Why Prabhupada uses this verse, Tadva Kusargo Janata Kaviplava? This verse Prabhupada says, puts in all the intros of all the kind of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says, even though my attempt, out of humility, Srila Prabhupada says, even though it is imperfectly compiled, talking about his own writing, still it can create change in the heart of the people. The reason is the motivation is different. Motivation is different. Because when a pure devotee presents something, even if it is imperfect, it's not imperfect, Prabhupada's writing is not imperfect, I'm saying, even if it's not completely present, still it's not wrong information. It is to purify the heart. It's not the Mayava statement. It is Siddhanta, the philosopher is correct. Maybe it is composed imperfectly. Still, since the content is bona fide, it can create a change. It doesn't imperfectly compose doesn't mean now when I am Krishna and I am Krishna, I am God, you are God, everyone is God. This is not imperfect composition. You understand? This is not imperfect composition. One can have some mistakes. In the right presentation also there can be some mistake. That we can say, okay, imperfectly composed. But there is no change in the philosophy or, you know, trying to speculate on different subject matters. That is not imperfection in the composition. So there, Maharaj, if you remember the lecture, Maharaj also quoted verse from Sri Sanatan Goswami. That is, if somebody is hearing holy name or Krishna Gatha from a Mayavadi, it is like Sarpochishtam Iva Payaha. That is Sarpa, that is a snake. So the poison has entered the milk. So if you drink that milk, you are not just drinking the milk, but you are drinking poison also. And by that, your spiritual life is doomed. In the same way the material body is doomed, the spiritual life is doomed. Because they are not presenting the right philosophy, they are confusing people. So that is different. Now, quickly finishing, so we know how to control the speech now by the process of Krishna Gatha. And Prabhupada makes a very interesting statement in page 5. The preacher of Krishna Gatha is always beyond the clutches of death. I am asking you how. Mention here. How a preacher of Krishna Gatha is beyond the clutches of death? What? Clutches of death. Page
5. So
then he
was
going
to jump to the
general
board of the Lord.
Okay.
The Lord was
going to
that person.
Yeah, that is a. Okay, I will add that as the realization that there is no death for the spirit soul. One can get to that side. So that is one point. What else?
What he gets is another material body he has to suffer. Mm. But for a devotee, he gets an eternal body.
Mm. So, in other words, there is no more samsara, means there is no more repeated birth and death. So on one level, in terms of realization, he understands. Just now the 12th canto of Bhagavatam we heard a couple of days back. This, what is the term used? Pashibuddhi, right? Murugan was explaining very nice. It's a Pashibuddhi, that is this materialistic intelligence, the animalistic intelligence, the animalistic mind, that there is death, there is no death. That is the whole point of it. There is no death. So one can come to the realization that there is no death. Because death is only for the body. For the spirit soul, there is no death. So one can come to that realization. Second, there is no more repeated birth and death. There is no more samsara. Second. Third is, it's actually very interesting. Prabhupada mentioned the technique to avoid death. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in one of the purports, he says, if one is chanting Sankirtan very nicely, if a pure devotee is doing Sankirtan so nicely, then he can actually invite Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is very happy to accept such an invitation, and he can come and join the Sankirtan, and then there is no more death. This is another statement of Srila Prabhupada. The first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, how to avoid death. So in the three ways we can see, in the realization level, then in terms of practical level, that is no more samsara, then also bit more and more on a higher level, how can one avoid that? Then it is written here that there is no, a preacher of Krishna Gata is always beyond the clutch of samsara. So this is how, this is what we get if we can control the urge to speech. Speak, basically speech of nonsense.
So we want more
things. Yes. Yeah.
Sri Ramakrishna temple.
Tell me, yeah.
There is a Yamnath, there is a multi of Yamnath as well. Mm. And they said that once taking the darshan of Lord Ramana, I mean, way to progress. Lord Ramana goes through Yamnath as well. Once you have taken the darshan of Lord Ramana, you will not see any Yamnath after you.
If you wear Kanti Mala, then you will not see
Yamadusa.
Pretty good deed. Just wear Kanti Mala. That's not the only purpose of Kanti Mala. One can practice with more after wearing Kanti Mala. Let it be the beginning at least. Now moving to the mind. So first one is gone, speech. Next is the mind. Thank you. Yeah, helping my speech.
So what would be the purpose of speech? The purpose of speech. Speaking means Krishna Katha is not purpose. What is the purpose of speech?
What is the purpose? Tell me. Why do we speak Krishna Katha? Or why? What do you, okay, Krishna Katha means? Okay, can you explain Krishna Katha? Now, it means, does it mean that we have to be only Bhagavatam stories only we'll speak? Is it like that? Or Bhagavad Gita versus Bhagavatam versus and Bhagavatam purport? I think, Prabhu, how are you? Sarva Dharman Bharadeshya. What can you speak? Or you know, chapter after chapter realization. So what is, how can we use speech? Okay, so that this is I leave to little bit we can discuss, because then you can write it in your assignment. You can, after the essay you can write how you can control your speech on a practical way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There are strategies, but on a regular basis also you have to consider. You have to live in this world, right? You have to talk to other people. So what will you speak? Can you speak only Bhagavad Gita? That's my question. What else can you speak? Yeah, one can. Exactly. One can speak about service.
Preaching service.
Preaching service, yes. So many things are there which are not nonsense. Okay. Now we have to avoid nonsense speak. In a, like in a farm, we're criticizing, but we had an exercise to avoid criticism. Right? Don't criticize. So, very difficult. So, naturally, and it's like if you throw a ball to the sky, eventually it has to come down, fall to the ground. In the same way, initially we may be in a high, then in a few minutes, maybe a few hours, just goes. You know, naturally things come from the mouth, you know, which are not related, irrelevant. Criticism. So these are inappropriate. How many things? So this is part of your essay. Do we need further discussion on that, or would you be able to write? Yeah, it is part of it.
And we still hear.
Yeah. It is part of it. Yeah, it is part of it. It is part of it. One shouldn't speak nonsense or hear nonsense. I mean, one has the option to leave the place or, you know, to avoid as much as possible. That option is there for everyone. So, one shouldn't enjoy. I will not speak, but someone speaks, I will listen and. And it's like the story of 5-10 people were standing and they were criticizing about a person who was not there. So after some time, one person left the group. So the 9 people started criticizing the laughers and enjoying the person who left. After that, one by one was going, and whoever left, the rest of the people were criticizing. Finally, 2 people, it was 1-to-1, 2 people. So they were happily enjoying the criticizing the rest of the people. Then the question arises, who will leave? Because both doesn't want to leave actually. Because if they leave, they are actually losing the association. One cannot criticize to oneself, right? So they need some company to talk about someone else. So this is the situation in this world. Speaking, hearing both are, that's a good point, because we have the tendency to listen. Service is fine, yeah. It involves, we will come to that point. You know, there is in the process of necro devotion, there is exchanges between the devotees. These are acceptable. But one should understand, it's not nonsense. We are not actually offending or criticizing anyone. But it is to help each other in devotional service to understand others' problems. We are not perfect beings. To understand others' problems, we may see these are all acceptable. But it doesn't mean, you know, just one can talk cinema stories and music and the whole series of story after story. Or the drinks and this and that. That's all present. Not true. And now it is coming to the mind. And mind, again, it is inappropriate. There is an appropriate way to control the mind, and there is inappropriate way to control the mind. And appropriate way of controlling the mind, or inappropriate, what is inappropriate way? Yoga. Then through yoga, what one can create? Not material. In terms of mind.
Equilibrium.
Otherwise, Prabhu writes vacuum. Some or other create a vacuum in the mind. Means nothing. Nothingness. Some people consider that is a perfection. There is nothing in the mind. Shunya. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. There is nothing. That is another sense of mind also nothing. So that vacuum is the best way to control the mind. But the problem is, if there is a vacuum, it wouldn't take much time to fill it with so many things. So that is the problem with the vacuum. Because vacuum means there is a lot of space. And, you know, people are rushing to get in, you know. So we may have an empty movement, or it will be an empty movement. There might be much, then again filled with all nonsense. Rather, Prabhupada specifically mentioned the appropriate way is to specifically what Prabhupada writes in the purport. Think of Krishna and? exactly. Think of Krishna and there is a challenge. That is, how to serve Krishna best. So, mind needs activity, right? So, if we are thinking about Krishna, and we cannot always think about name or form of Krishna all the time, but if we can think about service to Krishna, I have to do this, how can I improve my service? This has to be our mood. If we want to make progress in devotional service, Prabhupada is actually giving a very important guideline, that is how to serve Krishna best. Any service, if you are trying to improve that service, then it's actually pleasing Krishna. And that is the best activity of the mind. So we have covered speech, mind. So you had to remember the essay also, that is, how can you appropriately use this in your personal application, these principles of controlling the six urges. And in terms of mind, a further analysis is given, that is, the mind has two divisions, or the agitation of the mind has two divisions. One is avirodha priti and one is avirodha yukta krodha. So in the avirodha priti means unrestricted attachment. It can include Mayavad adherence to Mayavad philosophy, belief in fruitive activities, karmakanda, belief in the plans of material desires. These are all unrestricted attachment. That is, one believes that by fulfilling the material desires, I will be happy. By getting a big house, I will be happy. But getting a position, I will be happy. Anything, any material desire, just by fulfilling, I will be happy. This kind of thing, belief in the material desires, that is part of avirodha priti or unrestricted attachment. This is one part of the agitated mind. Next, very important, because when one has such desire and when one, that desire is unfulfilled, then what happens?
Anger.
Turns into anger. We have learned that in Bhagavad Gita, right? What is that? What is the verse? Which verse is turning of, you know, where the, yeah, what is the beginning? All the sequence. Where it starts from? Dhyayato vishyam pumsa ish abhijayade sangha sanjayade kamat krodha abhijayate. Kamat krodha abhijayate. Kama means desire, material desire. From material desire, krodha abhijayate. Krodha means anger. Exactly the same point. So we have this whole lot of material desires, and from this, when the krodha comes, the anger comes, when it is unfulfilled. So Prabhupada, this is the connection between mind. Because mind means, it has agitated mind means that desires, and when it is unfulfilled, it turns into krodha. And so from mind we are actually moving into krodha. And what is the inappropriate way of stopping krodha? Or anger? How can we stop anger? Inappropriate way. You know, bite the teeth, hold the fist. Somehow or other, you know, somebody wants to beat or, you know, want to punch, and, you know, somehow or other, you know, shaking and, you know, somehow or other controlling. But there is an appropriate way. What is the appropriate way of using the anger? Yeah, that's mentioned. Yeah. So it is mentioned, it's very interesting. First of all, can devotees be angry?
Yes.
Yes. But generally, what is the mood of devotees? Are we in an angry mood? Then what is our, generally what is our mood? Or what has to be our mood?
Humble.
Humble. Trinadapi, suni chayana, tarorapi, sahishnana. So it is humble and tolerant. Right? So given that, we have to be humble and tolerant. How can we be angry? Or can we use the propensity to be angry? Yeah, if we can use in Krishna's service just like Hanuman or Arjuna, then it is acceptable. To those who offend the Lord and His pure devotees, we can become angry. But if someone is against us, then we don't have the right to be angry. Then that is the time for us to show we are tolerant. See, we cannot be angry. Angry doesn't mean I am a devotee, how can he act like this? Okay, and I have strength, I can give a punch. No, that's not the way of using anger. Anger is only if other devotees, somebody is blaspheming, attacking, then one can become angry. Which Prabhupada, right? One has to be angry like fire in such an occasion. And if somebody is blaspheming Krishna, then one can become angry like fire. I have seen very, you know, senior disciples of Prabhupada, you know, somebody is speaking Maya philosophy and all, you know, question like, you know, everything is one, or, you know, just denying Krishna. Sometimes they become, you know, just like fire, you know. You cut them like fire with the words. So, you know, that is the real use of becoming angry. But not for our sake, you know. How can you treat me like this? No, we cannot become angry. Even on books, we cannot become angry. Even if people you know, blasphemous or something, you know, we can avoid, but we shouldn't make a scene, we shouldn't become angry, we should be self-controlled. Very important instruction. Especially dealing with, you know, in preaching, in different forms of preaching, when we are being attacked, well, not necessarily physically, even verbally. Physically, if you are attacking, we don't have to tolerant, okay, beat me. One can avoid, one can save his body, belongs to Krishna, one can save one's body. That's fine. But one shouldn't try to attack at any cost. One has to be composed. That's very good. So, it's clear how to control the anger. So, it's clear. What was the first one? Speech, mind, anger. So, mind and anger are related because it is coming from the frustrated desires which are lingering in the mind. So, two things we have covered. One is speech, second is mind, which includes anger in oneself. And the third one is demands of the body. And it has three things. One is tongue,
belly
genitals, and from quoting Bhakti Siddhanta, I say it is in a straight line, and it, everything starts from controlling of tongue. So there are very wonderful instructions for us regarding controlling the tongue and belly. It's not just tongue, belly together, and the solution is the same. What is the solution? Very simple, tongue and belly. And now, what is the solution? Yeah, Mahaprasad. But no, just not enough. With little bit more, you said, no, that's right. Chanting is there, but in terms of prasadam, a correct statement regarding prasadam. Only prasadam. It's not whenever it is available or whenever it is convenient. No, only prasadam. Prabhupada writes, tongue and belly can be only controlled if it is one. Determines that he is only prasadam. Very important. Then we hear the glory of prasadam, that is sarira abhidhajara. We are not chanting the whole mantra, but I am very interested in the translation. Translation is, O Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance. Why this material body is a lump of ignorance? It is matter. Yes. So it matter means, what is the prime quality of matter? Dull and achit, right? Unquiet, that is chit and achit. It's completely chetana, is not present at all. In that sense, it is a lump of ignorance. Second understanding of lump of ignorance is, it is demanding gratification. Knowledge means giving gratification to Krishna. And ignorance means gratification for the senses. So that is also another. And the senses are network of paths leading to death. This is the glory of our body. Senses are the network of paths leading to death. Why? Why is it written like that? Yes, that is one. That's a good point. If I'm considering this body, what is going to happen to the senses? It's going to die and be finished. So yes, it can create future birth and death. The senses are enough powerful to create future birth and death. Yes, that's right. And even in this body, it is a network of path that is leading to death only. The body is going to die. Now, somehow or other, I have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment. And all of the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. Demanding. Even for devotees, suddenly if we see prasadam, what happens? Offered a bhoga, whatever, you know, suddenly. Even, what does we go to prasadam? You go to a place where people are eating junk. Tongue can still. One may not eat straight away, but there is an attraction. Maybe that's good. Tongue is here. That's pretty good. Tongue. Like, another example. Some people perform severe austerities of not eating anything, even devotees. But if they see suddenly some prasadam lying there and nobody is there, suddenly, you know, just go and eat something, pop it in the mouth. Tongue is denied. That's the reason we have difficulty finish eating if it is a delicious item, right? Tongue is demanding one piece. Yes, very nice. One more. Belly is like no. Ear is like yes, no. So this is continuing because the tongue is very obvious. Tongue is the superior, right? When it is really, really extreme, then you can stop. It's like one person ate too much. Extreme. And his stomach started, you know, almost pain in that condition. He went to a doctor. Doctor said the cure is, well, he gave one pill and said he had to eat this. This is the cure. He said, if I had the space to eat this pill, I would have eaten four more gulab jamun. So this is the condition. this is the demand of the tongue. So very, very bad. So Taramasi Jihu Adi. Then it is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world, but you, dear Krishna, you are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your Lordship, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, and in love call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. So this is prasad. Now, regarding prasadam, Prabhupada gives a very elaborate description. What is sense gratification and what is not sense gratification? So we have to be very clear. Point one, what I would like to tell, because some of you may be cooks. Extra quantities of chili and tamarind is considered sense gratification. So devotees should understand one should eat sattvic prasadam. Everything is prasadam, we say, Prabhu, it is prasadam, chili is full of chili, but Prabhu, it is mahaprasadam, you should eat. But it's written, what is that? It has to be in sattvic. So not too much chili, not too much tamarind. Okay, it's very clearly mentioned. Then I'm not reading everything like betel nuts, various spices, pan, marijuana, opium, liquor, I'm not reading the whole thing. Everyone should understand. Okay, these are prohibited. If one accepts prasad only because of its palatable taste and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to avoid very palatable dishes and even while eating prasad. So opulent prasad not for every day, only for festival, and not every day is a festival. So these are the things we have to consider. Here, every day is like a festival. You have to only time. You have to only time and space. Go to the right space at the right time. Then you can have feast every day three times or more. So one has to, that's the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has specifically mentioned for Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir. Mahaprabhu has mentioned that is it. Taught us to avoid very palatable dishes even while eating prasad. And next, even more important. If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intention of eating such nice food, we are involved in trying to satisfy the demand of the tongue. How is it? If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intention of eating such nice food, we are involved in sense gratification. We shouldn't meditate. For Krishna pleasure is okay, but we shouldn't think, yeah, today I will offer nice pakora because I am meditating on that for the past few days, I haven't eaten that. So, cauliflower pakora and tamarind chutney. Krishna, that is a thing, so I will offer and I will eat. So, Krishna is not there, meditation is full of our own sense gratification. So, it's again, see how much. Why? Because this is the way only we can. With just eating prasadam is not enough. It has to be right prasadam, and with right consciousness, if you eat, it can control the tongue and belly, and in turn, genital sotra. So if that doesn't happen, then it will not happen. You see, if the consciousness is not right, even just eating prasadam too much, it will not satisfy the condition. So here, again, quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jihvara lalase ye iti uti Dhaya Shishnodara Shishnodara Parayana Krishna Nahi Paya. So it's again interesting. That person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate and who is always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to attain Krishna.
No attachment to
one can like some certain prasadam, there is no harm. One may like something over other things. One may have dietary requirements, that's fine. There is no harm. But if you are, say, if you are offering barfi, but you cannot meditate on if it's for my enjoyment. One has to be very careful. That's the reason unnecessarily one shouldn't peep into deity kitchen. Deity plates are covered because of that, because of the wrong consciousness of the people. So deity kitchen, one has to be very careful. One shouldn't just enter and, you know, see. That's the reason even we restrict people who do deity service or, you know, plate and, you know, if we are filling, we are actually offering bhoga for the Lord, and we are doing. So we have to be very cautious that it is only for the Lord and it's not for me. One should say it is Jam Krishna Idam Mama. You know, we have to think in this way. It's for Krishna, it's not for me. So that consciousness is very important. Otherwise, then what happens? Offering, we think about that and we don't worry about Krishna, and after that we are meditating and we are eating the same thing. So one has to be very cautious.
So when we say that doctor in
one is the beginning stage. One is going to just focus on oneself. So at least offer to Krishna and have it. We say, that's all right. That's the beginning. But if one wants to improve one's consciousness, then whatever one cooks, Krishna has to do the center. That's the next level. One has to come to that platform. If you really want to control the time, then that's one thing. So there is an instruction by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu: do not dress luxuriously and do not eat luxuriously. So everyone okay with that? Do not dress luxuriously, do not eat luxuriously. But one can eat and one can dress, there is no problem. Prabhupada himself said, first dress and then address. Provide as a statement. First dress, then address to the preacher. Remember myself? Yeah. First dress and then address, okay? So this is Prabhupada's statement. So that is what Prabhupada says. And finally, so it's clear how to control the tongue and belly. Yeah. So ultimately two things are involved in anything. Mind is also involved and the tongue is also involved. I'll explain to you how. And then first of all, we have to clearly understand tongue is achit, dead, no life. Mind is also dead, because both are achit, right? Both doesn't have any consciousness. But when the spirit soul embodies one body, then the consciousness is emanating from the soul throughout the body, to the mind, to the intelligence, to the tongue, everywhere. And this consciousness is like this. One can ask how the spirit soul is completely pure. Then how can have a consciousness which is impure? Because our consciousness is impure. Why? It is just like when the consciousness is passing through the filter of false ego. It becomes citta. Citta means impure consciousness. So the impure consciousness is running through our mind, our body, avatar, etc. Okay? Now, first, if one is hungry, one needs some food, right? That's the general demand. So that is a belly is demanding, I'm hungry, I want something. Then tongue, how it knows all the taste? Because in the mind, different tastes are already stored, registered. I'll give you an example. If you pick a North Indian, he has attachment for roti. Right? How much is my rice? How much will I eat? You know? If it is rice, I don't want anymore. You know? I'm just already. We see roti immediately. Right? So, you know, some other place, you know, from south, we say dosha voya. So, dosha, so nice. A specific attraction. From Gujarat, I don't know, maybe dokla. Both. Both roti, rice, dokla, everything. A specific attraction. Kakra, dokla, whatever. Everything. Sweet. There's so many. So many things in attraction. So, biryani with lot of chili. So, how we develop this attraction? Generally, we cannot say it is genetic. It is mostly it is how our tongue is being trained. So, for instance, in the past 7 years at least, 7-8 years, I am not eating chili much, very limited. So, I cannot relish chili anymore. If there is too much chili, I cannot relish the prasadam. So because the tongue is changed over time. So it is according to the conditioning. So how it happens is a combination of the mind and the tongue. So tongue gives the taste and the experience is registered within the mind. And next time when we see the same thing, that experience is popping up. And you say, yes, that is gulab jamun. That is very nice. Yeah, I should eat it. And something which is abominable, tongue doesn't have any problem. Not interesting. Something which is realized, yeah, the mind, the experience, tell you, the water is flowing in the mouth and it's very nice. Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. So everything is achit, but when the polluted consciousness emanates and it actually activates the whole senses, including the mind, then mind and the senses work together. And there is intelligence also. Intelligence will tell you how to get it. That is the polluted. If the polluted intelligence will tell by hook or crook, you know, get something. Someone gets it. As it is, you know, Charvak Muni says, you know. What is that? Ranam krtavi gridam pipe. You can beg, borrow or steal, but eat everything which is cooked in ghee. The instruction of Charvak Muni. So it's an atheistic instruction. Okay, so that's how it's clear? That's fine. Then finally coming to the point, this is the last thing, that is about genitals. What is the appropriate use of genitals? First prover says, when one is becoming matured, one should get married. One wants to, one should get married. And then, one can beget children who are Krishna conscious. One can actually beget Krishna conscious children. That is the use of genitals. So prover says, marriage is not for satisfaction of the genitals, but to produce Krishna conscious children. So that is the use. So that's how we control genitals. So this is the controlling of the different senses. Now I'll read the final, a very nice instruction by Jagadananda Pandit from Prema Vivarta. We are almost finishing. Prema Vivarta. So it is mentioned. Can you see the four verses? Vairagi bhai gramya katha na shuni be kane gramya varta na kahi be ya be vili be ane sapne o na kara bhai sri sambhashana grihe sri chadiya bhai ashya cha vana yadi chaha pranaya rakhite gorakera sane chota haridasera katha sake yana mane bala na kahi be bala na pari be Hridayete Radha Krishna Sarvada Sevite. So this is a beautiful instruction, but it's heavy. And I have to understand. My dear brother, you are in the renounced order of life and should not listen to talk about ordinary worldly things. Nor should you talk about worldly things when you meet with others. Do not think of woman even in dream. You have accepted the renounced order of life and with a vow that forbids you to associate with woman. If you wish to associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you must always remember the incident of Chota Haridas. Incident is that and how he was rejected by the Lord, because he was in the renounced order and he had lust in his heart. So Mahaprabhu rejected him. Do not eat luxurious dishes nor dress in fine garments, but always remain humble and serve the Lordship Sri Sri Radha Krishna in your heart of hearts. Instruction. Clear? As a concluding statement, I can say, and sorry, yes, bro. Now, and the last paragraph in the conclusion is written in the 13th page. Conclusion Prabhupada says, by controlling the six urges, one can actually become Goswami, as well as one can become the spiritual master. Right? One can become the spiritual master by controlling the six urges. Now my question is, what is the application in terms of preaching, understanding this point in terms of preaching? Because think in the context when there are so many spiritual masters, so many so-called gurus in this world. So how can we use this verse in terms of preaching? When there are so many gurus, one has to see the tongue is controlled, the speech is controlled. How will we check the speech is controlled or not? Exactly, by are they talking about Krishna? Then we can see how their mind is controlled or not. Intention, whether to serve Krishna or something else. And anger, we can observe and we can see what it is for. And how about the body? Simple test will be, what are they eating? Check what are they eating. Then we can, in this way we can actually understand whether they are the real spiritual masters or a bona fide spiritual master or not. So this verse in fact gives us the indication, one, to see who is a real spiritual master, who is a real Goswami, and on the other side we can also see, we can actually set our standard, what do we have to do to become pure devotees. So Srila Prabhupada's movement is to make pure devotees. That is the idea, is to make pure devotees. So to come to that standard, what is the standard and what is the means to get to that standard? That is mentioned in this verse. By application of this verse, we can actually slowly progress to that standard. So one, we can see what is the standard to, in terms of preaching. Also we can see for ourselves what is the standard where we have to reach, where we are supposed to reach. Otherwise, then concluding, Prabhupada gives the quote, if not somebody is not a Goswami, then one is a Go Das, one is servant of senses. And then Prabhupada gives, quoting Prahlad Maharaj, what is their destination? They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chew. Means everyone is not the first person who is gratifying the senses. The senses are being gratified again and again and again and again. It's like sense gratification is just like, if you give a raw example, have you seen this bubble gum? Is it kind of rubber or made of something chewy? Yeah. Some person, one is chewing nicely and one is spitting, and take that and again put it in the mouth and again chew. How is it? Pretty gross. It's rubbish. But sense gratification is compared to that. We may not realize, we may see, yeah, it's very nice. That's exactly the same. Something which is already chewed, we are trying to chew again and get some juice out of it, which doesn't have any juice. So one cannot derive satisfaction by satisfying this six urges. So it is mentioned, no, control it. So as a practical means, we follow four regulatory principles and chant Hare Krishna, engage in service of the Lord. Now a peep into the next verse we are not doing now. It actually gives which are the six things we have to avoid in to make progress in devotional service, in the devotional life. And for the time being, you can actually start with the essay and finish it. Only 4 o'clock. 5 o'clock. Describe how we can switch turn that off. Describe how you can personally control the objects of the senses with appropriate reference to Sanskrit words and analogies from Sri Yuvadeshamadar.